Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, we are fired up and live from the Red Pill Expo in Salt Lake City, Utah, ladies and gentlemen, at the Salt Palace, theredpillexpo.com. If you can get a ticket, come on down, please do. It's today and tomorrow. If you can't get a ticket and attend online, tremendous speakers, incredible content, and a whole lot more. This is indeed the broadcast for November the 12th in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is hour 202. Sam Bushman and Chris Carlson, always defending God, family, and country, and protecting life, liberty, and property. So we got a lot to cover in very little time. Chris has questions. Let's talk about your questions first, Chris. Then we'll talk about should the right to vote be handed out like candy. And we've got a couple of guests this hour, which I'll introduce as well. And Chris, you can help me interview them. You've got questions first, Chris.
So, yeah, I have a question. If elections have consequences, Sam, then what are those consequences? If Democrats win a majority in Congress and they have a Democratic president, does that mean their life is of greater quality, but the Republicans' lives are of lesser quality? It doesn't matter, because last time I checked, this whole nation was under the rule of the Constitution. So no matter which political party rules, the government is still restricted in what they can do based on those constitutional restrictions and provisions. So why is it that Republicans think that their lives are going to be great when their leaders are in charge, and the Democrats think that their lives are going to be miserable, and vice versa? It doesn't make any sense. Aren't we in the same boat together?
Yes, we are. Constitutionally speaking, which we can get into, it documents that we should be in the same boat together, no matter who governs or who leads or who's elected or who serves. There's no question about that reality. But remember the Hegelian dialectic. The Hegelian dialectic says we need to basically divide and conquer. So we need to get you to vote for A, somebody else to vote for B, and we don't care if you even vote for C if you want to just dissent from both of them. But don't ever have a D, which is none of the above. Okay, so any options that they are okay with you accepting, that's on the table. Any options that they don't want you to accept are simply not on the table. And what they do is they divide and conquer, and they pit one another against each other. We've grown up in this societal division, this communist agenda, for our whole lives, and we've been propagandized and indoctrinated. How old are you, Chris? 55 years old. You've been indoctrinated for 55 long years. Now, a guy like you has unlearned a lot of the indoctrination. You call it a spade, and see it for what it is. But most Americans can't do that. They've been taught to fire across the bow to whoever they're against. Males are against females. Females are against males. Blacks are against whites. Whites are against blacks. Republicans are against Democrats. Democrats are against Republicans. In fact, even your favorite sports team is against the other guys. And this is what you've been indoctrinated with from the cradle to the grave in America, sir. And that's the reason for the problems that you're bringing up.
Yeah, and I can see it. I can see why people fall in this trap, because I was in that trap 22 years ago. But I was able to break out of the matrix. And I'm here and you're here to help others to do the same thing. Because I go on to say, we should be living under God's law. So regardless of what human beings are at the head of our government, it shouldn't matter. The Constitution is God's law. It's the embodiment of the principles that govern God's universe. And it should govern our universe and our little sphere of influence here. And if the Democrats are ruling the nation by a different set of laws than those of the Constitution, then they're violating their oath of office. So the problem is not that they're in office and that our guy should be, because the Republicans do the same thing. The problem is that we should be looking towards constitutional remedies to rectify the situation. And I'll give you six examples. Number one, if whoever is in office, Democrat or Republican, Sam, Article 1, Section 5 reads, each house of Congress may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, which includes voting for unconstitutional legislation, by the way, and with the concurrence of 2/3, expel a member. Did you know that Congress has the power to expel any of its members? When
yes,
has Congress ever exercised that within our lifetime? Never.
Never. They usually just censor and mock publicly, but they don't take to the next level like they should. And that also relates to the power of impeachment. When a lot of these activist judges are belligerent from the bench, which we see over and over and over, Congress has the authority and right to flat out impeach them as well. But again, we don't use these powers seriously at all. And that's part of the problem, why we have these incompetent and oftentimes activists from the bench and or, you know, criminals in Congress who violate the law with impunity because we don't hold them accountable. We don't kick them out of office. If we did and we prosecuted them to the fullest extent of the law, this would stop, Chris.
Yeah, so that's not the number one remedy, okay? Now let's talk about the Supreme Court. And we are familiar with this remedy because we look up to the Supreme Court as if they're gods and goddesses, which is not a good thing. And after all, their opinions are just that. They're just opinions. But if they are righteous in how they rule, those opinions can be very powerful tools in mitigating the results of bad elections like what we just experienced. So that's remedy number two. The Supreme Court could rule any legislation. I don't care how many pieces of legislation Congress passes in any session of Congress. The Supreme Court, I believe, has an obligation when bad legislation is passed to rule it unconstitutional. They can do it 1,000 times if they need to. They get paid enough. Okay, so there's number two solution. The Supreme Court may rule on any legislation. Number three, the executive department may investigate and prosecute any member of Congress based on Supreme Court rulings or any other inferior federal courts. You know, just like they do with the January 6th illegitimate investigation. The Justice Department. So the executive department through their Justice Department can investigate any congressman that is not voting in accordance with the Constitution. So that's remedy number three. Number four, the people could merely refuse to recognize unconstitutional laws. And that is a remedy at our fingertips right now. We can actually exercise that power today, legitimately, Sam. We don't have to wait for somebody to give us permission. We don't have to wait, you know, for our congressman or our president to say it's okay. We don't need permission to uphold God's laws. The Constitution is God's laws, and we are the ultimate sovereigns of this nation, and we can and should refuse to recognize unconstitutional laws. That's number four. Number five, the several states could refuse to recognize unconstitutional laws. And that would be even a greater remedy because people look up to the several state legislatures and the governors of the several states as having more authority than the people. They shouldn't, but they're recognized as such. So there's remedy number five. Number six, and if the states refuse to recognize the unconstitutional direct, and this is a little bit complicated. So let me just give you a little background. Originally, the Constitution gave the states taxing power with the exception of tariff duties and some excise taxes. So originally, the federal government, Sam, was funded by, and that's why we have the census. It was funded by the states proportional to the populations of those states. So if, for example, the state of Utah has 5% of the population of the entire government or the entire United States, then the state of Utah would owe 5% of all the tax revenue to the federal government. And every state has a certain proportional tax debt that they give to the federal government. That way the states are in control of the purse strings rather than the federal government. That was before, of course, the 16th Amendment was passed, which gave the federal government direct taxation power. Anyway, that's the sixth remedy. We have the remedies at our disposal. We don't have to wait every 2 years to elect the ridiculous people that end up getting elected to Congress. We have many, many constitutional remedies at our disposal that we're not using. So forget about the election, Sam. Let's go with the remedies at our disposal right now that we should be exercising instead of just waiting for somebody to do it for us.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I am, and I think those constitutional remedies are critical. But again, folks are pointed to this divide and conquer mentality, this Hegelian dialectic mentality. They're not looking to the Constitution for guidance or solutions because they've been trained not to. They've been trained that the Constitution is the problem, not the solution. Chris?
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, I tell everybody, hey, I'm nobody special. I mean, I graduated with high school, I hate to admit this, with a 1.67 GPA. I don't say that to brag, obviously, because that's embarrassing. Okay? I'm nobody special. I'm not brilliant. And if I can figure these things out, certainly our Yale and Harvard and Columbia graduated congressmen can figure these things out. They're a lot smarter than I am. So they can't use ignorance as an excuse, because somebody like you or I can get on the computer and go to the website that we can derive this information from and learn these things. And we need to. And if we're going to save this noble republic, Sam, we are going to have to look to God and his solutions. And the solution manual is the Constitution that we need to be looking towards. And it's an open book test. We don't need to. Every piece of legislation that is passed should be compared to the Constitution for constitutionality. And if it doesn't pass that smell test, even Mike Lee has a 6% deficit as far as his constitutional conservative score is concerned. That should be 100%. Because
yeah,
it's an open
it should
book
be
100%,
but there is a difference a little bit in interpretation sometimes, or sometimes you vote for something that gets you a bad rap, but you do it for a good, legitimate reason, or vice versa. Sometimes there's reasons for slight disparities. So I get a little bit, but I get your point as well. Hey, should the right to vote be handed out like candy? Let's talk about that with Chris in seconds on your radio.
For decades, leftists, liberal socialists, and feminists have been screaming and crying, "My body, my choice," in order to justify the premeditated murder of innocent children in the womb. However, this is a fallacious argument, since science has proven and demonstrated that the baby has a separate set of DNA from the mother. If it's not your DNA, it's not your body. That is science, and you should trust the science. Remarkably, the same people who have been claiming "my body, my choice" for decades now want to force you to inject foreign substances into your body against your will. Obviously, they never cared about "my body, my choice." They just wanted to control you and have permission to kill babies. I am Ammon Bundy, and when you elect me governor of Idaho, I will sign an executive order on day one of my governorship prohibiting abortion in the state of Idaho. Because premeditated murder of the innocent should never be legal anywhere in the world, especially Idaho.
Paid for by Ammon Bundy for governor. VoteBundy.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Okay, So at the end of the last segment, Sam posed the question, should the right to vote be handed out like candy? And I think Bill Jasper may be listening, and I'd like to pose the question to him, get his commentary. I don't think that the right to vote should be handed out just because you're a citizen of the United States. I think you should demonstrate competency. I think you should demonstrate an understanding of constitutional principles. And I also think that you should demonstrate an understanding of simple economic principles before you should be given the right to vote. And I think there should be a test. It shouldn't be easy. It should be attainable by most American citizens. But it shouldn't just be you have the right to vote because you have a pulse. Bill Jasper, how do you feel about that?
All right, hold on. So I'll introduce Bill. Bill Jasper is with the New American Magazine, ladies and gentlemen. And he stepped away to take a quick phone call, so he's not ready for you. But I'll introduce him. He's a well-known writer, well-known investigative researcher, well-known, leader in the John Birch Society, and has written for the New American Magazine for quite some time. We've had him on the radio with us several times over the years, and we're grateful to have him again as he gears up to jump on the Red Pill Expo stage. All right, are you there, Bill?
I'm here. Are you picking me up?
No, we're not. Did you flip on his mic?
Yeah, I hear him.
You can hear him? All right, good. Oh. So, why don't you ask your question, Chris, to Bill? Welcome, Bill.
Yeah, Bill. Well, it's an honor to be talking with you. Oh, hello. Yeah, it's an honor to be talking to you. I appreciate all the good work you do there at the John Birch Society. So the question that I pose is, should the right to vote be handed out like candy? In other words, should there not be a test of competency of constitutional principles and of economic principles to qualify to receive the right to vote here in the United States of America?
Well, I would say this. Look, first of all, the voter qualifications are a state issue. We're a constitutional republic. We used to have in the United States, first of all, you had to be a citizen. Now we don't even have that. They won't even allow you to check to see if you're a citizen. That should be the very first qualification. In other words, you can't just walk into this country. You can't in any other country in the world, if you're an American, just walk in there and vote in their elections. It's absolute lunacy. It's worse than lunacy. It's criminal and it's intentional. When it gets to some of the other things that you propose, I'd have to look at that a bit closer because we had in many states actual property owner requirements. In other words, you had to own property because you paid taxes, and so you couldn't just have everybody voting to raid everybody else's bank accounts and property to pay for things that they were not themselves having to pay for. So the property ownership is an issue. It's more difficult now because we have so many people renting, but that's something that should be looked at again. And there's a number of different proposals for that. When it gets to the constitutional and economic competencies that you talk about, that gets a little more difficult to implement. I'm not averse to looking at that, but it does give a possibility for manipulation and improper exclusion of people for the right to vote for the franchise.
They would only be excluded if they couldn't pass the test. In other words,
who's going to make the test?
And so I would say this, though. Okay. I think private property is what matters the most. In my opinion, private property is really the key to this exercise, according to the Founding Fathers, Bill.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the way constitutionally it was in most states. And so that is a key thing. I go back, though. First of all, the first thing is citizenship. When we come to voter integrity and getting back our proper franchise, we can't have it if there's outright cheating going on. And so before we get to competencies of that regard, in the New American Magazine, our most prolific writer and expert on this has been Colonel Kurt Hyde, who has for decades been he's a historian of elections and of voter fraud and voter rights, etc. And he's pointed out a number of things that we have to do. And one is we have to, first of all, get back to paper ballots. If you don't have, he was opposed to this. We were about the only ones back in the 80s when all of the digital voting came in. Professor Hyde was teaching systems analysis and computer sciences. And he went and gave a seminar at Boston University, I believe it was, back in 1986. And he said, look, we can't even talk about any kind of voter integrity as long as we're talking about electronic voting, machine voting, digital voting. And conservatives, Liberals were all in favor of going high tech. They said this is how, this is we don't need to resort back to the horse and buggy days. We're now a high tech society, and this was even pre-internet. They were really pushing this, and Ross Perot was pushing this, and a lot of people who were conservative but not really constitutionalists and weren't really thinking this through were all in favor of it. And so in the New American Magazine, Colonel Hyde has pointed out a number of things that we have to do. Paper ballots do not obviate all fraud, but it reduces fraud immeasurably over what we see today. And it so that is just one thing. You have to have actual paper ballots. You have to have ID, voter ID. Most states now are very lax, or it's non-existent. You can walk right in. You can have same-day registration or motor voter, all these different things which allow people to register and to vote fraudulently.
Yeah, and Bill, that same laxing of reality on the right to vote and the integrity and the appropriateness of voting in terms of making it so easy just to roll in there even if you're an illegal and vote. Barack Obama was caught on record saying, yeah, you know, if you vote, you're a citizen. You can be an illegal and, hey, if you vote, you're a citizen. He flat out criminally lied in that case. But to make a long story short, property ownership was one of the great keys that the founders put in place. And that was when property was hard to get. Nowadays, with all these government loans and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all these other things, property is relatively easy to get. They follow the same trajectory there. They want to hand out carrots and sticks to the people and have them be deceived into taking these things. But property in the old days was hard to get. You had to save. You had to scrape. You had to work hard. You had to have discipline. You had to. And the property owners then, after they owned property, because it was so hard to obtain, they didn't take it for granted. It's kind of like paying for your own college as opposed to your parents paying for college. There's something in that battle, that fight, that effort, that struggle that teaches you and that refines you. And okay, and so property ownership then was the gateway, because you didn't have all kinds of incompetence and people who weren't disciplined and people who didn't study and learn and understand what that property right meant and et cetera, et cetera. Was it a perfect gateway? No, but it was the one they used because it was the simplest one that did not pit people against one another. Right. And so Absolutely. That's kind of why it was used. And that's why it's the best simple test. You don't got to go take a test. Your life is the test. Right.
Absolutely. And I mean, so you can look clear back at the time much closer to the founding when Davy Crockett was in Congress. And of course, you've probably mentioned the story, the sock dolliger of Davy Crockett when he met up with
Horatio. Not yours to give. Yes, sir.
Horatio Bunce. And Horatio Bunce gave him a lesson in constitutional principles and constitutional history, because Davy Crockett, well-meaning congressman at the time, the famous backwoodsman and frontiersman, had voted for an unconstitutional act, which he thought was a very generous thing to do, which was to help people who had their in Georgetown whose houses had burned down. And so
and let's be very clear, it is a generous thing to do
with other people's money,
with not with other people's money. And that is the problem.
Absolutely. And so he was completely shocked. He had they call it the sock dolliger, because Horatio Bunce, who was just a citizen farmer who understood the Constitution, understood the principles, a hardworking, God-fearing man, told Davy Crockett, I can never vote for you again. And he said, well, why not? And he said, because you voted for an unconstitutional and illegal act. And he was smacked. He said, "What? I've never done that." And then he explained to him, yes, you voted for that act. That was not yours to give. You were free to give those people with whom you had sympathy as much of your own money as you deemed fit. You could have been as generous to them as anything.
You know what? Great point. We should not hand out votes like candy. I want to keep Bill with us a little longer. He's going to jump on stage here in a few minutes to talk about secret societies. And I want to get his take on that before he jumps on stage. We'll do it in seconds and then let him fly. You are listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Your daily Liberty News. Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Friday marks the first Veterans Day since new legislation was signed by President Biden expanding health care benefits for service members who were exposed to toxic burn pits. This, as Vice President Kamala Harris says, veterans and their families deserve to be taken care of.
Fulfilling that obligation means making sure veterans can access the support and the resources they need to thrive.
Consumers of all ages and income groups are feeling less optimistic about the state of the economy due to recession fears. The University of Michigan's early consumer sentiment reading for November fell 9% from last month to its lowest level since June. Buying conditions for big-ticket items decreased sharply due to uncertainty over rising interest rates and continued high prices. Republicans from across the country are heading to Georgia to show their support for Senate candidate Herschel Walker. The former NFL running back will face Democratic incumbent Raphael Warnock in a runoff election after Tuesday's midterm election failed to produce a clear winner. As the crisis on the U.S.-Mexico border continues, the Biden administration is making moves to provide abortion access to illegal immigrants.
The Biden administration is directing shelter officials to ensure that unaccompanied immigrant children in federal custody have access to abortions. The way the Biden administration is doing this is by transporting children to states where abortion is legal. The Office of Refugee Resettlement said officials must not prevent unaccompanied children from accessing legal abortion-related services and must facilitate abortions when requested by a minor. From the West Coast, USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
The Dow gained 32 points on Friday to close the week at 33,747. This is USA Radio News.
Paid for by GovMint.com.
The 1878 to 1921 Morgan Silver Dollar, a true American classic and one of the most iconic silver dollar coins in history. It's been 100 years since the last Morgan Silver Dollar coin was struck for circulation. And now, for a limited time only, full pound bags of original U.S. government struck Morgan dollars are being released to the public. That's right. You can own a full pound of 1878 to 1921 classic American Morgan Silver Dollar coins, all in very good collector condition with fully visible dates and mint marks. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-473-1745 now to secure collector-grade U.S. Morgan Silver Dollars by the pound, struck during the Wild West and the Gilded Age. Plus, receive a bonus American Collector's Pack valued at over $25, free with every order. Call 1-800-473-1745 now to secure your full pound bag of Morgan Silver Dollar coins before they are gone. 1-800-473-1745. That's 1-800-473-1745.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Bill Jasper from the John Birch Society, JBS.org, thenewamerican.com, with us. And we're talking about his jumping up on stage. I think you go on stage tomorrow, right, Bill?
That's correct, yes.
All right, you're going to jump on stage tomorrow, and you're going to double down on secret societies. Boy, how did you got a long history to go through, don't you?
Well, yeah, so Ed Griffin asked me to speak on secret societies then and now, and yes, I'm going to be covering a lot of ground and a lot of history. And, you know, people might ask, well, what's the relevance of that today? Well, you look around today and we see something happening that most people are going, what the heck just happened? Or what the heck is happening? They're usually not saying heck. And we recognize that terrible transitions are taking place in our society. We're seeing whole new vocabulary and a whole new lexicon incorporated into our daily life. You know, we're non-binary. We have children being injected with not only experimental quote-unquote vaccines, but with puberty blockers. Their kids are being mutilated in many different ways surgically, having their genitals removed. It's a crazy world, and people
come off that plan.
Yeah, people are saying, "What is going on?" We have the critical race theory and the LGBTQ transgender stuff taking over, and people are the borders are being overrun. The cities are being burned down and now being occupied, tent cities of homeless vagrants. So obviously some very major things have happened that we've never seen before in this country or in the history of the world. Under the pandemic, plandemic, we saw the whole world for the first time in history on lockdown. We moved closer to Chinese-style communism in 1 year than most people could have even imagined. And how is all this stuff possible?
Yeah, and Bill, we've never had that in the history of the United States before, right?
Correct.
Never.
And first time ever, all the churches are closed down.
We've never had that ever. We've never also locked down healthy people, right?
Right. So, I mean, everything has been turned upside down. And people say, how did this just happen? Well, it didn't just happen. This has been building. This is what is called the revolution within the form. The communists developed this over a century ago. And that is, we see a revolution happening, but most people don't see it because the form of our daily lives seems pretty much still intact. We have all the same institutions, all the same, the flag and all the symbols are still there, but we see them being eaten up, torn down gradually, and things are transitioning. What are we transitioning into? We're transitioning into a new world order. That's one of the things I'm going to be talking about, and that is
thus the new normal.
That is what we're told. That is what we're told. It is the Great Reset. Now, in the 2020, the World Economic Forum, which is the bastion of the world globalist, capitalist, all the major companies, the billionaires of the world, came out with, under Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, with the Great Reset. And the Great Reset calls for resetting, transforming the world economically, politically, socially, spiritually, morally, and biologically. That's where the transhumanism comes in. Nothing this megalomaniacal has ever been proposed before. And this is by the top academic and banking and business titans of the world. But what's really critically important here is that these globalists, they call themselves globalists, they're promoting globalism. They want to remake the entire planet and all of humanity, as I said, economically, spiritually, politically, socially, morally, biologically. They are working in unison with the communists, globalists and communists. So you see the leading figure of the communist world, Xi Jinping. He is one of the most famous guests and allies of the World Economic Forum. And not only him, we have all these other top communists being brought into the World Economic Forum. So the communists and the globalists are working together to bring about this great reset, this new world order. And this is happening now, right before our eyes. But most people are oblivious, at least to the most important levels of this. Now, during the Trump administration, the term deep state became widely known because people could recognize there's some force behind the major media, the government officials who were from within the federal government, who were thwarting all of the plans, all of the efforts that President Donald Trump was trying to implement against the globalist agenda, trying to bring back business, technology, manufacturing to America, trying to protect our borders. The globalists don't believe in national borders. They don't believe in national sovereignty. They want to destroy those things. So the deep state became widely recognized as a term referring to those people who have ensconced themselves deeply, not only in our government, but in our business and financial institutions, academia. And this deep state is really working to carry out this great reset.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we called the deep state the shadow government.
Absolutely.
The shadows of power, if you will.
Right. So we published a book by James Perloff called The Shadows of Power, and it particularly focused on the Council on Foreign Relations, which is really the brain trust and the face of the deep state. It isn't the only or even perhaps the most important of the organizations, but it is the most prevalent, dominant one that is out
there. It's the closest one in the United States to which people are usually chosen from to be elected and or to serve in positions of power here in America. By no means are they the real shadows of power or real behind the scenes. They're kind of a front group that's half exposed, right?
Correct. So they are precisely that. They are a front group. They are a public face, which has this certain respectability because they have been able to oversee. They just turned a century old here in last year. They were officially formed, the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR, in 1921. This last year was their centenary. And over that century, because they began with all these big Wall Street fortunes, they have been able to place their people in the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, in media, in academia, in the scientific fields and whatnot. And so, after a century of assiduously gaining controls over various institutions and levers of power, they have succeeded in being able to really be the secret government, the shadow government. And that's where James Perloff's book, Shadows of Power, is very important. Before that, former FBI official Dan Smoot had written his book on that, on the invisible government. And so that was back in the 60s. So this has been exposed for quite some time. In my talk, I'm going back even further. And
You go back to the Federal Reserve and creature from Jekyll Island, G. Edward Griffin, the founder of the Red Pill, which we're at now.
Absolutely.
As you go back further, and then you go beyond that, right?
Yeah, so I mean, so the founding of the Federal Reserve was the whole plan and genesis for that came out of a secret meeting which actually preceded the Council on Foreign Relations. In 1910 at Jekyll Island, the secret meeting and the participants in that even referred to that as a conspiracy. They went there secretly, they planned this, and it was one of the greatest revolutions in the history of the world, the concentration of power over money. And that's one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, to take control of the issuance of credit. And that's what they did with the Federal Reserve. So, yes, I go back in that, and then I go back to the 19th century and the whole move across the world promoting communist and socialist revolutions. And the important point here is that in all of those cases, we had globalists, that is, top financial interests, actually supporting those communist and socialist organizations, groups, and individuals who were their proclaimed enemies. How does this work? Why would they be doing that? Because really what they're after was a concentration of power. And so they create a left hand, which goes out there and says, we have to overthrow the capitalist powers, and we demand more centralization.
Hey, Cameron, can you skip the break? Keep going, Bill.
So so what we're seeing now is the culmination of really two centuries of revolution, beginning with the French Revolution, which, of course, broke out in 1789. And what's interesting there is that the secret societies then, the Jacobin clubs, were all part of the Grand Orient Freemasonry in France and the Illuminati, which is an organization which is, there's much misinformation and disinformation about, and lots of, if you go to Wikipedia will say the Order of the Illuminati is largely myth and it's a conspiracy theory and whatnot. But I'm going into the actual sources on that. And it's very clear that at the beginning of the French Revolution had its George Soros. George Soros, of course, is infamous today for funding revolution all over the world, funding revolution here in the United States, just in the elections, not only him, but Mark Zuckerberg, etc. Well, the French Revolution had its equivalents, the most important being Philippe Egalite, Louis-Philippe, the Duke of Orleans. And he was the richest man in France, probably the richest man in the world at the time. He was funding all of the revolutionary activities, both the revolution in the streets, the pornography, the destruction
of morals. Yeah, history certainly repeats itself, doesn't it, Bill?
Yes.
Hey, where can people get more information if they're not able to attend the Red Pill and hear you speak tomorrow? Hopefully they'll attend in person in Salt Lake City, theredpillexpo.com to get your tickets now, or online if you can't make it. They've got tickets where you can watch remotely as well, theredpillexpo.com. But if they really can't, is it going to be written up in the New American or what?
Yes. We've written about this a number of times in the New American magazine, thenewamerican.com. We're going to be doing more on that, and I will have a subsequent video of this available online as well.
Fantastic. And we go to JBS.org or The New American, both?
Both, yes.
All right, TheNewAmerican.com, JBS.org. Bill Jasper, thank you so much, sir.
Sam, always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, do me a favor and flip off that switch, will you, when you set that down. So, Chris, we move straight from secret societies to Bosnia. And you've got an account of somebody who was in Bosnia when times got tough, and they've got some sound, sage advice for us, sir.
Oh, boy, do they. Yeah, so this guy actually lived through a scenario similar to the one I think that we will eventually experience here in America, at least certain parts of America, where if, for example, you know, Joe Biden wants to quit drilling for natural resources, natural gas, petroleum. If that ever happens, there are going to be shortages. How are you going to heat your home? We're going to have food shortages. We know that. I mean, the writing is on the wall. How are we going to do that? This guy actually lived through a scenario during the early 1990s, during the Bosnian War, where he imparts some wisdom on what we can expect. And what he discovered is very eye-opening. He's... let me give you the introduction to his statement. It says, I am from Bosnia. You know, between 1992 and 1995, it was hell. For 1 year, I lived and survived in a city with 6,000 people without water, electricity, gasoline, medical help, civil defense, distributed service, any kind of traditional service or centralized rule. Our city was blockaded by the army. And for 1 year, life in the city turned into crap. And the number one item that he talks about, we had no army, we had no police, we only had armed groups. And can you imagine whether or not those armed groups were hostile or friendly? Well, the answer to that question, Sam, is both. Some were bands of thugs that have banded together to loot, to rape, to steal, because everybody was hungry. They did get some MREs, airdropped into them from American forces, which is good, but that didn't guarantee that they had a sufficient amount of food. Besides, who knows, once you airdrop, you know, a big old tranche of MREs, who's going to get to it, whether they be the good guys or the bad guys. He said that after a month or two, gangs started operating, destroying everything. Hospitals, for example, turned into slaughterhouses. And I don't mean to impart this information to our listening audience, Sam, because I want to be an alarmist. I want people to be prepared. But before they can be materially prepared, they need to anticipate what could potentially happen. I don't wish this to happen on America, but I think it will. And you and I both, Sam, are preppers. We know that eventually we will most likely have to use those supplies that we ourselves are preparing for such a time. He said the Americans dropped MREs every 10 days to help blockaded cities. This was never enough. Some, very few, had gardens. Okay. It took 3 months for the first rumors to spread of men dying from hunger and cold. So people eventually started dying because these supplies, and very few people had gardens. And I suppose nobody had food storage at that time because, you know, who would suspect that they would ever need food? You know, you could just go to the store and get it. We removed all the doors and the window frames from abandoned houses, ripped up the floors, and burned the furniture for heat. Many died from disease, especially from the water. And he says two people died from waterborne diseases from his own family, Sam, and he had a pretty big family. We drank mostly rainwater and ate pigeons and even rats. Okay. Here's another eye opener. You know, a lot of women obviously are concerned about their virtue. It was a struggle for a lot of women to get food at this time. And guess how they got food? Guess what they traded for a can of, he refers to it as tashonka, which I looked up as a can of stewed meat. Literally, women would sleep with other men in exchange for food. Okay? So if that's not a sobering fact, and I hope I don't see that, you know, within the sphere of my influence ever. But if we're not prepared, the likelihood of that happening, Sam, it is very potential. A lot of women, especially who had children, who had to provide food for those children, would literally trade their virtue for a can of stewed meat. So he talks a lot about arms. So arms, ammunition, candles, lighters, antibiotics, gasoline, batteries, and food. We fought for these things like animals. In these situations, everything changes. Men became monsters. It was disgusting. In fact, he said men who were previously very civil under these circumstances turned to be very brutish and very animalistic. And, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen with people that we're surrounded with in our neighborhoods where we're going to hunker down. But you never know. If they're not prepared and they know we're prepared, you know what the potentiality of that scenario could result in. Strength was in numbers. You like this, Sam, because you have 8 children. You've got a big family and a big extended family. Strength was in numbers. A man living alone, getting killed and robbed would be just a matter of time, even if he was armed. Don't stay apart from your family. Prepare together. Choose reliable friends. Surviving on your own is practically impossible. He says, in quotes, that's what I think. Even if you're armed and ready, if you're alone, you'll die. I have seen that happen many times. He goes on to say, families and groups well-prepared with skills and knowledge in various fields, that's much better. So, you know, make sure your relationship with your family and extended family is good. That's going to be a net asset, because people are much, and even if only psychologically, I think it's a lot easier to survive when you're surrounded by other people that can support you and buoy your morale, you know, in difficult times, because it'll be just as much of a psychological and a social struggle as it will be a material struggle. He talks about trading. All of the exchanges occurred in the street. About 5 kilometers away was an entire street for trading. It was all well organized, but going there was too dangerous because of snipers. You could also get robbed by bandits. So people turn into animals. I mentioned that before, but I think it bears repeating. Things get really dangerous. In fact, there's a political pundit. Think of his name. He always says that he's famous for saying, when people lose everything, they lose it, which is kind of a play on words for, you know, when people get desperate, Sam, even though they may not have been capable of violent acts previously, you know, they turn into animals. So, you know, it's hard to know who you can and cannot trust under desperate circumstances. Travel was strictly limited because of snipers. He says, nobody used automobiles in the city. The streets were blocked by wreckage and by abandoned cars. Gasoline was very expensive. If somebody needed to go somewhere, that was done at night. Never travel alone or in groups that were too big. Always 23 men. I don't know where the 23 came from, but always 23 men.
No. All armed. Always 2 to 3 men.
Okay. There you go. That was a myth. I don't think
because
that was
23 is a large group. There's a typo there. I'm telling you, it's 2 to 3 men. Because that usually consists of assassin teams, just so you know.
Wow. That was pretty good. You picked up on that. All armed travel swift in the shadows, cross streets through ruins. I'm sorry, his English isn't that good. I'm just quoting here. Cross streets through ruins, not along open streets for obvious reasons. There were many gangs, 10 to 15 men strong, some as large as 50 men. But there are also many normal men like you and me, fathers and grandfathers who killed and robbed. Listen to that, Sam. Fathers and grandfathers who normally would be very civil, peace-loving people, they turned into killers and robbers. I mean, this is real. And this is not made up. He literally went through this for a year. Now, obviously, I'm not sharing these details with our listening audience to be an alarmist and try to sow seeds of doubt or despair. I'm sharing this with us, with your listening audience, because eventually I think we will have to pass through such times in this country. The way things are going, the trajectory doesn't look positive. So be prepared. He goes on to say, the most protected houses were looted first. Listen to this. Maybe this would seem strange, but the most protected houses were actually looted and destroyed first. In my area of the city, there were beautiful houses with walls, dogs, alarms, and barred windows. People attacked them first for obvious reasons, because they think that these people probably have the greatest amount of resources available. So people like you and me, Sam, I think we're in pretty good condition. I visited your house, and I know it's fairly modest. So hopefully, you know, our homes will not be targets. But, you know, whatever, we should be armed anyway to propel such an attack. He said wood disappeared quickly. Now, I did a survey, and I live on the border of Bureau of Land Management land here in Springville, where I live. And in my backyard, there are many, many trees. Many of them have died and would make great firewood. So I've got a wood stove that I plan to heat my house with. But here's the problem, Sam. As much wood as there may be in the back of my house here, if there are other people with wood stoves and fireplaces, that wood's going to get claimed very quickly. Probably the first year, it'll be gone, the first winter. You know, so that's something to consider. Natural gas, you know, you can convert your furnace over to natural gas if you need to. So that's an option. We removed all the doors. I think I went through that one already. It pays to be innovative. Now, listen to this. I was a paramedic. In these conditions, my knowledge was my wealth. Be curious and skilled. In these conditions, the ability to fix things is more valuable than gold. Listen to that. The ability to fix things is more valuable than gold. Items and supplies will inevitably run out, but your skills will keep you fed. I wish to say this. Learn to fix things, shoes, or even people. Like I said, psychologically, it's going to be a tremendous amount of stress.
We're about at the end of the hour. Let me quickly summarize what we've learned from this account in Bosnia. Understand, folks, that there's strength in numbers. Being alone, you'll eventually get killed or robbed. You can't deal with it alone, even if you're armed. Strength is in numbers. The most protected houses were looted first. So you know what? You got to avoid the appearance of protection or strength and wealth, or you'll get attacked first. You need guns and ammo first, and second, everything else. Because if you get something, you can always trade for guns and ammo. But if you don't have guns and ammo, your trading days are, for the most part, over. Hygiene is very important, ladies and gentlemen. Hygiene is vital, as well as getting as much medicine as possible. Hygiene and medicines are critical. So when times get tough, what you think is important becomes not important at all. And what you didn't have any understanding of importance becomes of vital importance, literally to the death, because people turn into animals. Even the best people, shockingly, go astray unless they're very, very grounded. And it becomes a dog-eat-dog world out there, ladies and gentlemen. And our goal is not to focus on the negative side of this or the scary side or to put you into a panic. Our goal is to help you understand what it takes to survive, what it takes to thrive, what it takes to truly have protection and stability. Should we go through something like this in society, we want to put you in the best position possible. We're flat out of time, Chris. Thank you so much. Wrap it up for us, buddy.
Yes, sir. Without God, we cannot win, Sam. With God, we cannot lose. The battle for freedom is the Lord's, but we need to be engaged in that fight. Lieutenant Carlson and liberty-loving patriots everywhere, continuing our duty, sir.
And Sam Bushman, broadcasting live from the RedPillExpo.com. Get your tickets to attend in person if you can today and tomorrow in Salt Lake City. If you can't, virtually do so as well. The RedPillExpo.com. I am live, and I'm Sam Bushman. We the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, can and will restore our grand old republic. But you got to get involved, make it a great day, and choose the right, will you? God save the Republic of the United States of America, because we declare this nation shall endure forever.